The following program is a sports handicapping show. That's right, we will be discussing sports betting and all kinds of other gambling stuff, including game predictions. As you know, not every bet will win, but we do our best. Feel free to use this information at your own risk, and remember, wager wisely, folks. Broadcasting from the Vegas Video Network studios, live from the Las Vegas Strip, Covers.com presents Vegas Sports Day. And now from the sports betting capital of the world, here are your hosts, Teddy and the Professor.
It's Monday in Sin City, and you are watching Vegas Sports Day, the pulse of the sports betting world. I'm your host, Teddy Covers, joined as always by my colleague, the Professor, Dave Malinsky.
Coming up today, how some principles discovered by Isaac Newton can help us to break down NFL rookie quarterbacks. We become an espresso bar to give you the caffeine fix of basketball information you're going to need for a wild ride the next 24 hours. And if you don't stick around for today's play of the day, you just might be committing a cardinal sin.
An espresso bar. We're going to be an espresso bar on this show? Good. Let's start it off with a nice dose of energy and caffeine. And Dave, let the viewers out there know exactly what your first take was from the past weekend's action.
It's a strange thing that you'll develop over time in rooting for games. When you do this as long as we have, you know there are certain things you have to have if you're going to cash a ticket. You go back to our Saturday play of the day on this show when we had Miami as an underdog at Florida State. And at halftime, you're minus three in turnovers. Now, you might think, okay, you're rooting to score points. You're rooting to stop the other team. But we understand what the historical tables show in terms of having a three-turnover deficit. You're not going to win that game at minus three. So what you're rooting for in the second half is a turnover somewhere, thinking if we can get it back to minus two or minus one, naturally it'll impact the game flow. But it's just how difficult it is to get a game home at a minus three differential. So you root for the ball to bounce more than anything else. Fortunately, that game came in anyway, which is a rarity in that spread range. Also, though, does tell you something about Florida State going forward. Teddy, what do you bring with you from a pretty wild weekend?
Yeah, and that was a minus three, by the way, with a punt return touchdown allowed as well in that first half. So when you get the special team scored in the mix as well, it makes it even a little bit tougher to cover. But Miami, never in doubt. Well, I don't know what you were sweating out in that ball game. Obviously, a little bit of a sweat. But the bottom line is we were able to catch that ticket. Unfortunately, for myself at least, you know, the Vegas Sports, they had a great weekend. We cashed our recommendations on both Saturday and Sunday. I did not do as well for my clients. In fact, I had a truly miserable day yesterday. Day fine on Saturday, stunk it up on yesterday. After Eli Manning's a fourth down pass was batted down, I took the collar for the clients yesterday. And, of course, that's a very disappointing thing. You don't like to have an offer in any given day, but particularly for an NFL Sunday. That's an ugly thing to do. And obviously on this show, just like anything else, Dave, we have to confront reality head on in the cameras. When we're hot, we're going to talk about it. When we're not, we're going to talk about it. And I stunk it up in NFL action yesterday. But what I wanted to talk for the first take today is talk about how a professional will approach coming off a particularly disappointing or disheartening type of afternoon. And you know, I know that some of you have read the quotes in the New York Times from an article a couple years back where I talked about after a game that I thought I lost with the San Diego, I was out in the backyard with a baseball bat knocking things over. That doesn't happen very often. That's, you know, obviously it takes a special game and a special type of loss to make me go off the deep end like that, even for 5 or 10 minutes. The bottom line is that off a game, you know, off a normal bad day, what do? You chill out, you walk away from stuff for an hour. My personal thing right now, obviously with a five-month-old son, I like to take the boy for a walk. I took the boy for a nice long walk, get your mind off it, and then you come back in. No, you don't start drinking. No, you don't start smoking. You sit down and start doing your work for the next day, and that's the professional approach. Take as much time as you need to get your head right off a lousy performance, and then you have to put it behind you and get focused on the task at hand. And, of course, the getting focused on the task at hand right now means talking about Market Watch for a Monday. Obviously, today's one of the wildest days on the sports betting calendar, and there's a fair few of these over the course of the basketball season. Games where you have action morning, noon, night, and into tomorrow morning with all the tournaments in play, Dave. We're pretty close to a 24-hour cycle over the next 24 hours.
It's actually a great opening thing that ESPN does. They sequence it just the right way to be able to put a full 24-hour cycle in there. So for those of you on the East Coast, you will be able to bet the Hawaii-Cal State Northridge game at 4 o'clock in the morning, your time. People getting out of bed on the West Coast tomorrow can have breakfast while they're watching West Virginia play Kent State, 7 o'clock Pacific time, 10 o'clock on the East Coast. So over the course of today's show, both an Insider Six Pack and in Money Time, we're going to talk about some of those games and some of the keys. First thing we want to focus in on, though, is what is the home court advantage going to be for some of these games? Because it's a little bit different than normal. Some of these late night starts tonight, let's say the game at St. Mary's, the game at Hawaii, you're going to have terrific student sections. They turn it into a pajama party. You're going to see a lot of students coming dressed that way. That student section will be terrific, but you're not going to get the locals. That's the difficulty when you play at that odd of a time zone. And especially West Virginia tomorrow morning. You're going to have a good student section. Again, they're probably going to get a lot of students in play, but there's that difficulty where you're not going to get the local fans that come in. They've got to get up and go to work. Other things to keep in mind, too, are the visiting teams for these settings. Even though Cal State Northridge is a West Coast school, this game in Hawaii is going to tip off at 1 a.m. on their body clocks. That's a little bit awkward. And think about Kent State tomorrow morning at West Virginia. Yeah, both teams have to get up and play at the same time. It's easier to get up out of your own bed and out of your own routine than to get up in a hotel room with an alarm clock going off and have to be out of sorts a little bit. Those are some little side factors to watch in this 24-hour cycle.
Yeah, no question that there are certainly some advantages here for the home teams, but there are also some advantages for the road teams. Particularly when we talk about these early start games, I genuinely think that there are times, at least, where the road team is going to have an edge. Why? Well, they've got curfew in that hotel. And the home team's not as easy to enforce that curfew pre-game. When we're talking about, again, a 10 a.m. local tip-off, that means the guys have to be at the arena by, 7:30, I would think, at the latest, but probably 7 o'clock, at least 3 hours ahead of time, which means that those alarm clocks may be a little bit tougher for the home team kids to be able to wake up to than the road team. So while there are definitely advantages to being at home in these awkward time settings, not every game is going to play out the same way as a result. And it's also worth noting here, Dave, we have to, you know, this is a Las Vegas show. Las Vegas is the center of the sports betting universe. Eastern time, forget about Eastern time. It's all about Vegas time. We're talking about 1 a.m. Pacific time as a late tip-off tonight. I wonder if we'll see a halftime line on that game. Would there be anyone in-house making numbers at 2 o'clock in the morning? Maybe. I think there'll be shops where you might be able to find that. And then, of course, 7 a.m. tomorrow, before we even get on air, we'll have a final score report in college basketball.
To keep in mind when we talk, though, about those curfews, there will be a game tipping off at the very same time that we go on the air tomorrow. San Diego State at Baylor. Yes, another one of those unusual early starting times. No curfew problems for the visiting Aztecs. We know that there's absolutely nothing to do in Waco, Texas, after 11 o'clock at night.
Although, if you've seen the type of kids that Steve Fisher likes to recruit at San Diego State, they'll find something to do. They'll find a way to get in trouble. You watch. Maybe. At least that's certainly a possibility, something to be aware of as we talk about that Baylor-San Diego State game for tomorrow. But for now, we have been getting great emails, and we're going to catch up on the emails tomorrow. Packed show today with college hoops and NFL Money Time editions. So we're going to hold off the emails today, catch up on them tomorrow, please. Keep those emails coming in. Great question. SportsDay@covers.com. Again, you can follow us on Twitter, getting new signups every day, @VegasSportsDay. And, of course, become a part of the community surrounding this show and the community surrounding Covers.com as a whole. Covers.com in the posting forums, active threads and discussion going right now. When we come back, it's post-mortem.
Are you looking for the latest odds, the fastest scores, the most important trends, and the best matchups and stats? Are you looking for the key late-breaking information that can make you a winner? Well, Covers.com has the answer. The world's largest sports betting community gives you a front-row seat in the heart of the action, from the opening lines to the final scores. If you want to stay ahead of the game, Covers covers the numbers.
Courtney Leone, this is Vegas Video Network. you want me to mention awkward silence? Let's do that then, okay. Never been on set here before. I'm always out live on location for Awkward Silence 2.1. I'm Courtney Leone, and you're watching the Vegas Video Network. Good, better.
Okay, guys, time to scrub up. Let's get into the operating room. It's time for the postmortem, where we take you deep inside the game to show you things you should have seen, but probably didn't.
And let's start with the Oregon Ducks. And, you know, last year's Oregon-Auburn National Championship game, it was billed as an offensive showcase. But, of course, that offensive showcase never took place. Whichever side you had in that ballgame, the right side was the total, the under. The explosive Duck offense never got on track against a defense that could match their speed and had plenty of preparation time for that unique Oregon approach. But the Ducks were in the game until the final possession because their own defense more than held its own against the likes of Cam Newton and company. Now, Oregon's on the verge of playing into a high BCS spot once again. And when we see the 53 points they hung up on Stanford on Saturday night, it'll be once again the offense getting the lion's share of attention for this Oregon team. But there may be a whole lot more than that going on. And that's what we're all about here in the postmortem.
If you saw Oregon play defense in that championship game, you were probably surprised, but you shouldn't have been. If you saw Auburn play defense the last 2 weeks against Washington and Stanford, you were probably surprised, but shouldn't have been. Take a look at these last two games and showcase just how good they were. 8 takeaways against 2 teams that are pretty good with the football. Only 678 yards allowed on 148 snaps. Both Washington and Stanford, two of the better offensive teams in the nation, were held to their season low on yards per play. Now, you're not going to find a lot of this when you look at the overall Oregon defensive statistics. They're going to be skewed because of the pace they play at. But what are we finding out? Come November, come the end of the football seasons, this is a very good defense and much better than the early numbers show. Why does that happen? Well, think about this. If you want to build a defense to excel late in the season, what could be better than practicing every day against not only one of the best offenses in the country, but at the tempo that Chip Kelly has the team playing at? These Oregon defenders are better conditioned than almost any team they're going to play. A rare case of where in November, it's a defense that can actually wear down opposing offenses with their speed and with their hitting. But you won't see this in the overall statistics. When we talk about that pacing element, Oregon's defense has been on the field for at least 70 plays in every game this season. That's the only team in the country that's had to go at least 70 every time. So you're going to give up a lot of yards, points, and first downs when you're on the field that much. Instead, with Oregon, focus on the yards per play elements, where they've actually been good and are getting better, and particularly focus on the late season developments of a team that's in outstanding condition on that side of the ball. What goes up must come down. That was sort of what Isaac Newton told us many, many, many centuries ago, and has proven to be true till now. But there were some questions about Cam Newton in that regard. Was he going to be that rare talent who was so good that some traditional models didn't apply? Well, Carolina got off to a bad start this season, more because of some bad bounces than bad play. They went into their break actually with advantages of plus 23 first downs and plus 451 yards over their opponents. That's pretty good football. So the belief is, okay, we've got this quarterback who's at a special level. The rest of the team will start to come around. We got something going here. And yet when we look up, Carolina's been a home favorite in back-to-back games, lost both of them outright to unimposing teams. Teddy, have the laws of gravity finally come into play?
What goes up must come down. Is that what you're trying to say here? Is this an Isaac Newton versus Cam Newton reference? What's the bad pun you're trying to make, Mr. Malinsky? Is there a joke I'm missing in this regard? No?
I thought it was actually pretty good.
Very good. Excellent stuff. And when we post-mortemize the Cam Newton situation right now, we have to talk about, if we're going to make up words, post-mortemize is a good word, isn't it? I'm getting mocked over here by the gallery. But the bottom line is, we take a look at the last two games for Cam Newton. What's happened? Well, he's been sacked 8 times during that span, and that's double the rate that he'd been sacked through the first 7 games of the season. There were only 14 sacks, only 2 per game through the first 7 weeks. Over the last 2 ball games, there's been 4 per game. One sack for every 10.4 pass attempts during these last two losses, compared to one in every 18 prior. So how's that happened? Well, initially, early in the season, we saw opposing teams saying, hey, this is not a quarterback who's going to be able to beat us throwing downfield, so let's just rush our four and we'll drop people into coverage. And, you know, they kind of dared Newton to beat them. And guess what? Cam Newton was good enough to beat them in the vast majority. Certainly in terms of moving the football downfield, maybe not the straight up wins, but Cam Newton was able to have success throwing downfield against a three or four man pass rush. So what we've seen over the course of the last couple of weeks is that teams have started to blitz Cam Newton. Five of the eight sacks that he's taken over the past 2 weeks have come on blitzes. And teams, of course, are realizing that by blitzing, it's going to force him to make awkward decisions, not only in terms of coverage, but in terms of where the blitzers are coming from. And that's been the magic. You know, Newton may go down in history as one of the best athletes to ever play the quarterback position. He's certainly at a different level than most QBs in the NFL already, even halfway through his rookie season. But his decision-making is still very much a work in progress. And we've seen the confusion that, again, mediocre, not great defensive teams, not teams with great pass rushes, mediocre defenses like the Titans and Vikings have caused just by blitzing Cam Newton is something that is most assuredly going to have other defensive coordinators around the league trying to copy and emulate until Cam Newton figures out how to beat the blitz.
When we come back, Teddy's going to pop the top on some really cheap malt liquor. Guys, we've got 24 hours of hoops nonstop. We got to save the good stuff for later. It's going to be time for the Insider Six Pack.
Hey, I'm Al Mann.
Is that how you get them to do that all the time? Just sit there and be an ass. Is that it?
Hey, I'm Al. Hey, I'm Al Mancini at Top of the Food Chain. You are watching the Vegas Video Network. We got big forks, big spoons. I got a big mouth. I got no guests.
Livestream is your premier place to watch live events on the web, mobile devices, and connected TVs. See new events daily or broadcast your own at livestream.com. Livestream. Be there.
Yeah, it's time to pop that top on our Insider Six-Pack. Dave wants cheap malt liquor.
Now, I didn't say I wanted cheap malt liquor, but if you're going to be up for 24 straight hours watching basketball, the cognac, the good stuff that can sit off to the side.
Colt 45? Old English? What do we want here? Does Milwaukee's best have a malt liquor? The bottom line is, let's start with that Insider Six-Pack. And we're going to start with the hardwood, starting with Central Florida, a team that came into the campaign looking like they were really poised for a breakout season. Very promising-looking roster. Well, good news, bad news scenario for Central Florida early on. First, the good news. Two key transfers, Jeff Jordan from Illinois and Tristan Spurlock from Virginia. They've both been cleared, they're both eligible, and both guys have immediately become key cogs in the Knights' early season rotations. But boy, this is a messy NCAA probe surrounding the school right now, and things are getting worse in that regard, not better. They've already lost the athletic director, Keith Tribble. He's gone. The head coach, Donnie Jones, he's going to be suspended without pay for the first three Conference USA games. The point guard, A.J. Rompza, is awaiting a ruling on his eligibility. He's not in action. And then three key guys, Marcus Jordan at the guard, and the two forwards, Josh Criddle and P.J. Gaynor, they were all suspended by head coach Jones for Saturday's win over St. Thomas. Haven't seen a formal announcement for today's ball game, but certainly the school's media send-out didn't list any of those three as being on the active roster. Florida State currently about a 10.5 point favorite over UCF tonight.
This is going to be a year that Detroit Mercy had a chance to unseat Butler and take the Horizon Conference championship with them. We're not sure how it's going to play out yet. Starting center Eli Holman, terrific player, guy who might even be on his way to the NBA, is on a personal leave of absence. They won't disclose why or when he's going to be coming back. Also, another key cog, Chris Blake, who's becoming a big part of their rotation at guard at the end of last season, also suspended for reasons that have not been announced. The only thing we know is, much like with Central Florida, on the school's official media release that they put out this morning, Blake not listed as being with the team for tonight's trip to South Bend. Sitting out tonight for Notre Dame is going to be Tim Abromaitis, a key part of their rotation. Abromaitis suspended for sort of a bizarre oversight of a rule. Played in an exhibition game for the Irish 3 years ago, a season that he later redshirted. According to the NCAA, if you redshirt as a freshman, you're allowed to play in the exhibition games. But if you redshirt beyond your freshman year, you're not allowed to play in the exhibitions. Does that make any particular sense? No, it doesn't. It was so nonsensical that Mike Bray didn't even know about the rule. But because of that violation, they've lost Abromaitis for the first four games.
Yeah. When we talk about NCAA regulations that are stupid and meaningless, you get me all riled up. And, of course, there's no point for that on a Monday morning, even though the NCAA makes stupid, meaningless decisions on a daily basis when it comes to the eligibility of so many of these players. And one thing we're trying to do for you here on the Insider Six-Pack is try to uncover some of this stuff maybe before it goes to press, before you read about it from your line service. I'd like you to find out about it right here, because obviously these numbers can and will move when it comes to point spreads. And one point spread that's already moved so far on a Monday morning is the Washington State-Gonzaga spread for tonight. You know, in theory, it probably sounded like a good idea for Washington State to open up with a high-profile matchup against Gonzaga on national TV. The reality, however, may be a little bit different. You know, in their last preseason game, the Cougars were without the guard, Faisal Aiden, their leading returning scorer. He's got a concussion. Doesn't look like he's going to be able to go. They're without floor leader, Reggie Moore, also a guard, the shooting guard. He also handles it at the point a little bit. And the forward, Abe Lodwick, he's got an ankle injury. So three key cogs for Wazoo already missing. Now, only Aiden of the three has been cleared to return for tonight. I misspoke a moment ago when I said he's out for tonight. He's expected to return to the lineup tonight, but may not be anywhere near 100%. And of course, we're talking about a team right now that has to go up against a Zag squad that we'll discuss more in our next segment. But for right now, certainly Gonzaga, a 12-point favorite. All the early money's come in on the Zags because of some of these Washington State issues.
Time for you to play along with us on one of those great conundrums in basketball handicapping. And through your emails and responses in the forum, I want to see where you go with some situations like this. We've got a fascinating one at Fairfield tonight. Ed Cooley will be coaching his first regular season game from the Providence bench. Cooley returning home to his hometown of Providence after having been the Fairfield head coach for the last 5 years. So who's got the edge in this sort of rematch? If you were at a school for 5 years, that means you recruited almost all the players that are there and you know them inside out. Is it Cooley bringing a tactical edge that's the advantage tonight? Or do the Fairfield kids bring a chip on their shoulder thinking, hey, coach, you left us for what you think are greener pastures? Well, guess what? We're going to show you that we're better than where you are. One of those fascinating little conundrums that come into play. A little bit of a lean here, we think, might actually be to Fairfield because two of the key cogs in their rotation, Desmond Wade, a transfer from Houston, Raheem Sanders, a transfer from Boston College, were not there when Cooley was the coach. Might give him just a little extra edge, but it's one of these fascinating conundrums of the tactical preparation ability versus the emotion. Let us know what you think about this one.
And I need you to make a number with me on this one, Dave, real quick, off the top of your head. Fairfield, what, minus 10 wins versus Providence this year? Is that a fair number? Minus 10?
That's probably low. Given the schedules, yeah. That's Fairfield could win mid-20s.
Oh, yeah, they won 25 last year, and they have a better team this year.
With their schedule, mid-20s, Providence, hard-pressed to get to about a let me go over your 10.
There it is.
I just thought, over the 10, for how much will you take?
I will take lunch.
Lunch, the janitor in the hall would offer dinner.
Come on, when we do bets between you and I on air, they should be for lunch. We shouldn't be betting for dollars, because then, well, you know, one of us will be ducking out of shows because we can't afford the $20 or something. You know?
20?
2,000?
I was just going to see if Rubichon was open for lunch, but, you know, we'll just win that bet. No, that was a bad line. That line should probably be about 13.5.
13.5 is a good number. Well, I wasn't making it as a betting number, but let's talk about betting numbers with Clemson. Of course, this is the Clemson football Tigers, not the Clemson basketball Tigers. And the good news for Clemson as they begin the week, the super frosh wide receiver, Sammy Watkins, a guy who's been mentioned as a Heisman contender in his freshman year. He does not have a dislocated shoulder. He was off the field for the entirety of Clemson's come-from-behind win at Wake in the second half this past weekend. And Watkins, I mean, a career year as a freshman. Maybe one of the best freshman wide receivers we've ever seen at the NCAA level. Listen to some of these numbers. 70 catches, 1,040 yards, 10 touchdowns. Oh, And by the way, it's only the second week of November. He's still got three or four more games to go in the regular season before the postseason begins. So, oh, I didn't mention the fact that he has 165 rushing yards, 7.9 yards per carry, or the fact that his 25 kick returns average 26.5 yards per kick return, helping Clemson win the field position war as well. So, it could, you know, we still have to see how, whether he's going to miss time, how much time he's going to miss. But the bottom line is that as a team, the Clemson Tigers have to have enjoyed a real confidence boost. The fact they were able to come from behind and win on the road without Watkins on the field against Wake Forest this past Saturday, once he returns, it'll make a confident team that much more confident. Clemson right now in this -7.5 to -8 range at NC State this coming Saturday.
One guy we unfortunately won't see again on a college football field, Hawaii quarterback Bryant Moniz, suffered a broken leg early against Nevada on Saturday night. Here's career ended. Good competitor, someone that we actually enjoyed watching on those late Saturday nights. But here's what you might see over the course of this week. Replacing him on Saturday night was Shane Austin, who'd been a walk-on, but had been in the program for 4 years. They thought that he offered the best chance to compete that night against Nevada. But this week, don't be surprised if young David Graves, a sophomore, ends up being the starter at quarterback. Maybe time to start building for next season instead of trying to salvage what's left of this one.
When we come back, we're going to put all of this information and news to work for you. It's money time.
Traditional media believes that after about 3 minutes, you'll tune out. Most Vegas media companies think if it doesn't jiggle, you won't tune in. At the Vegas Video Network, we think both are wrong. The Vegas Video Network is the first and only live online broadcast network that specializes in insider news and expert views about Vegas. We combine great storytelling with the ability to watch when and where you want, on your computer, mobile device, or television. Discover the real Las Vegas. Visit VegasVideoNetwork.com.
Okay, guys, it's money time! Okay, so I went all falsetto on you. It's happened, you know. Sometimes we got the money time, sometimes we got the money time! And tonight it's somewhere in between. But this edition of Money Time is brought to you by Covers.com. Remember, for all the key information you need in every sport, Covers covers the number. One of the most unique sports days of the year, no question about it. We have around-the-clock hoops as the NCAA season gets underway in full swing. And while we may not, I can't guarantee we're going to be up all night, Dave. I'm not planning on staying up for the 1 a.m., I should say, tip-off between Cal State, Northridge, and Hawaii. There are going to be really some very good matchups to work with and to discuss on air right now. So let's start in the Maples Pavilion in Palo Alto, where right now Stanford -15 against Fresno State.
After doing the weather girls so well on Friday, this should not have been a falsetto day. He needed to come in with Barry White today. You gotta reestablish things here.
Money time.
That wasn't a very good Barry White. Yeah. You should stick to what you do best. Okay, one of the things we've talked about on this show last week is how we like teams that had the exemptions to take the preseason tour. So many times it makes these college teams better. They'll go to Canada, they'll go to the Caribbean, go to South America, sometimes go to like Northern or Central Europe, play some pretty soft opponents, win games, get confidence, and do some bonding. With Stanford, we think they might have done something even better, though. Stanford played 6 games in Spain in September. These were not patsies. These were not walkovers. I'm going to make sure I actually pronounce this right. The Asociación de Clubes de Baloncesto, which is actually the second best professional league, according to most sources in the world, behind the NBA. As an example of how good they are, one of their better teams, Barcelona Real, beat the Lakers last year in a preseason game. So Stanford went over and faced some very difficult competition, and we like that because this is a team that's got a lot of depth. It means Johnny Dawkins give a lot of players some playing time. So how did it play out? They come back in their first game back, dominate Central Arkansas by 29 points. They get 5 kids scoring in double figures. This is a team that doesn't have a lot of superstars, but it's a deep and talented team that just might have a good chemistry for us to look at this early in the season.
Yeah, and Johnny Dawkins is an interesting story here because Stanford, you can't say that they were anything but a disappointment. in each of the last 2 years. 15 wins followed by 14 wins. So 29 wins over a two-year span. And yet Dawkins got a contract extension in the offseason through 2016. Some of it certainly had to do with the fact that they like what the kids are doing off the court. But some of it had to do with the fact that, hey, we need to have a stable recruiting base in place here. So letting recruits know this is our coach for the future. And Dawkins may not be under enormous pressure to win this year, but he's under some pressure, no question about it. And that's not pressure that we're seeing from Fresno State. Former Texas assistant Rodney Terry has taken over as the Bulldogs head coach this year. And, you know, it's a Fresno team that's going to be moving up in class next season into the Mountain West Conference. This year looks a little bit like a rebuilding campaign, and certainly they got a win and cover in their opener. It was a coin flip game against Illinois State. They led by one, 48-47, with a minute to play. Fresno hit the free throws down the stretch. Illinois State did not. And Fresno came away with the win and cover. But again, they had 21 turnovers in that ballgame compared to only 10 assists and 17 made field goals. That's not a good combination. And of course, Fresno really outclassed in the low post by a team like the Redbirds. Not going to get any easier against a team like Stanford.
Let's go to Spokane. Great little town. You ever get a chance to drive through? One of my little favorites when I head up to British Columbia for the yearly treks. Got Gonzaga right now, a 12-point favorite over Washington State. As Teddy had mentioned during Insider Six-Pack, Washington State brings a lot of personnel issues. That's the last thing Kenbo needed to start this season because he had two players opt out early to go on to what they thought were going to be the pros. Klay Thompson thought he'd be in the NBA this year. As we've heard since coming on the air today, the players' union has rejected the latest round of contract talks with the owners. This is a tough one now. We may not see an NBA anytime soon. Also, D'Angelo Castro, who is now paying and getting paid in Europe. So Washington State comes in very shorthanded tonight, but we're not sure Gonzaga's ready to take advantage. The front court's got NBA-type size, but those guards look like they're going to be an early season issue.
Well, they have a kid named Stockton running the point. How bad could it be for Gonzaga? Perhaps the younger Stockton, not quite the guard that his dad was. Certainly his first year with the team last year, 4 points, 2 assists. It was okay down the stretch. It wasn't very good in their opener. And, I mean, you talk about the interior size that the Zags bring to the table. This team's a monster. You know, you have Robert Sacre, 7 foot, 260. Elias Harris, 6'7", 240. These are guys with NBA bodies that certainly Washington State right now is not a team that can match. But when we look at what happened in the game, Stanford's opener against Eastern Washington, some real concerns here. They won the battle of the boards. They dominated the low post like they're supposed to, 40-22 on the glass. Only 77-69 on the scoreboard, however. And when you're winning the low post battle by a 2-1 margin on the glass, you're supposed to win the scoreboard battle by more than 8 points. What happened? Well, they didn't play good defense on the perimeter, allowed 13 made three-pointers, and frankly, the point guard play and the guard play in general, not what Gonzaga was looking for. They're going to cover this minus 12 tonight. They're going to have to get better play out of their backcourt.
Yeah, missing badly for them, and it's something you'll have to update, of course, as we start a new season, when you see guys that you think should be playing but aren't. Dimitri Goodson, who would have been the starting point guard for Gonzaga, started 68 of the last 69 games, transferred to Baylor. He wanted to be with a program where he could play football and basketball both. Naturally, at Gonzaga, you only get one of the two.
Yeah, and of course, with the Zags, they had a 17 turnover to 11 assist ratio in that win over Eastern Washington, the opener. That's not, again, the type of ratio we look for out of our double-digit favorites. Now, let's go to Moraga. Small town, big program. St. Mary's, minus 11 tonight. And it's a St. Mary's team that certainly may come into a little bit, may make them into the season with a little bit more urgency than most mid-majors. The Gales, well, they seem to get snubbed or be on the verge of getting snubbed every year. They were snubbed last year, a team that won 25 games, a team that had been to the Sweet 16 the previous season, and the NCAA decided, well, that 25-9 record simply wasn't good enough to merit an at-large bid, and they ended up playing in the NIT as opposed to the NCAA. So these early season games for St. Mary's may be a little bit more important than for the average team.
Saw something interesting this past offseason out of St. Mary's. Because of the success that this small program has had, he thought that Randy Bennett might be a candidate to step up that coaching ladder. He signed a 10-year extension. Shows that he's happy where he is. He likes dealing out of that particular community. He's got a lot to work with this year. He's got, as usual, that cadre of Australians on his roster, four of them this year. Also picking up a couple of guys who didn't play last year. Page and Levesque are going to be right in the rotation. So we'd actually like to be playing on St. Mary's early. Promise, we can't necessarily play against Northern Iowa. Over the course of the year, we're going to talk a lot about Ben Jacobson's record as a road underdog, one of the key categories for college basketball coaches. He's been one of the best. Now, it might look like a team that could get exploited on paper early this year. Six true freshmen, two redshirt freshmen, and three sophomores. You think, okay, they're that young. The coach can't get them developed that quickly. No, they knew what was happening with this particular turn of the roster, so they scheduled a trip to Brazil, one of those preseason trips we like a lot. Let's let Jacobson tell us exactly what he believed that that trip means. He said, that's why we decided to go this year. After the practices and going on the trip, I'm really glad we decided. Those guys are now a long way ahead of where they would have been on the first day of practice. This team might not have experience on paper, but with that type of coach and having that trip underneath them, they may not be what the paper shows them to be.
Yeah, we don't have it for Inside the Numbers today. I'm sure we'll have it for Inside the Numbers in the not-too-distant future. Northern Iowa, pretty darn good underdog in recent seasons in college hoops action. When we come back, Money Time continues, NFL style. We're going to break down the Packers and Vikings on Monday Night Football tonight.
Hi, I'm Chris Phillips from Talk Tales, and you're watching the Vegas Video Network. And if you stop by the studio, our producer Scott's going to buy everybody a drink.
It's Money Time, NFL edition. And let's start at the frozen tundra of Lambeau Field, where tonight the Packers 13-point home chalk with a total of 50 against the Minnesota Vikings. And the first thing I want to talk about here, Aaron Rodgers and his 129.1 QB rating. Just to put this in perspective, the best quarterback in the league last year was Tom Brady. He had, I believe, a 111. When we're talking about Aaron Rodgers' performance so far this season, it's at historic levels. So maybe, just maybe, we're talking about a regression to the mean for a quarterback that really hasn't made a whole lot of mistakes at any point this season.
But can we trust the Minnesota defense to be the ones to cause that regression? These teams just played a couple of weeks ago in Minnesota. Rodgers, 24 out of 30, 335 yards, three touchdowns, no interceptions. Almost a flawless game, the way that the NFL does their ratings. That's the problem. They spread the field so well. And he throws the ball down the field with so much accuracy, there's not a whole lot of defense can do except generate a pass rush. You'd like to think if you're the Vikings, you could generate that rush at home in the Metrodome when you've got the lead early in the game, which is what they had. And it didn't happen. Now it's a different story. You're on the road tonight. Rodgers has a better chance to dictate the game flow. So the story may not be Aaron Rodgers tonight, but it might fall on the shoulders of the other quarterback from a point spread perspective. Christian Ponder had a decent debut against the Packers the first time around, but had the game fall into his lap pretty well. He had a big home run pass on the first play of the game. Vikings scored a play later. They're up 7-0. Also up 14-7 early. So the game plan was where they wanted it to be. Not a lot of pressure, not playing from behind, but eventually it got away. After hitting that first big pass, he was only 12 out of 31 with a couple of interceptions. If the game breaks bad early and he has to get out of that playbook a little bit, is Christian Ponder ready on a night game in front of a very, very passionate crowd at Lambeau to maintain his poise?
Well, and there was something else that worked in Christian Ponder's favor in that first meeting. That was success that Adrian Peterson had for Minnesota. 24 carries, 175 yards, and a touch. I mean, Peterson's been a monster this year for a team that has had a very limited passing game. Minnesota's been able to control some game clock on the ground. They've been able to get big plays out of the running game, despite the issues they've had with the entirety of the passing game. It's not just been a Ponder and before him, Donovan McNabb. It's been a receiving core that hasn't been able to get open and break free for big plays. There have been a lot of different issues here for Minnesota. But the fact is, they're getting a solid running game. They have a basis for success against a divisional foe. And, oh, by the way, they're facing a Packers defense that last year in their Super Bowl season, 5.1 yards per play. This year, undefeated season, and yet A full 1.1 yards per play. Worse, 6.2 yards per play allowed so far in 2011 from a Packers defense that's supposed to be playing at a Super Bowl level.
Does it sound like we're getting ready for a Packer defense postmortem? Yeah, it is. It's going to be coming up probably as early as this week. No team in the NFL has fallen more on the yards per play chart than the Packers. And why do we focus on yards per play? A lot of people might say, well, the Packers have these big leads. They give up a lot of yards because the other team's playing catch up. That indeed happens. Yards per play is a different beast. That sort of eliminates that. This is, no, it's not that opponents are running more plays against you. They're being more successful on every play that they're running. There are some issues with Green Bay, obviously issues with Minnesota. So for tonight's play of the day, we're leaving Lambeau Field, where the Tundra won't be frozen tonight. In fact, we'll never be frozen again. They've actually got one of the best heating systems of anyone in the NFL. I don't know why they don't put that to their advantage, although if they ever become a running team again and Rodgers leaves, maybe they do that. So, Teddy, where are we going tonight?
Yeah, we're going to go away from the gridiron for our play of the day for Monday. We're going to switch back to the hardwoods and talk about one of the games that we referenced a little bit earlier, and that game, of course, the tree. The Stanford Cardinal minus 15 against Fresno State this evening. That's the Vegas Sports Day play of the day for Monday against Stanford minus the 15 in college hoops action.
Oh, and we should let you guys know that number was lower earlier in the day. Mm-hmm. We still think it works up to 15. So if you say, well, gee, it opened earlier, is 15 too high? We're good at the higher number. The 15 still makes play of the day status.
That's going to wrap it up for the Monday edition. I want to thank you so much for taking time out of your busy day to spend with us. For Malinsky, I'm Savransky. Enjoy the games and good luck.